Welcome to a new episode of the Between the Posts podcast. Today, for the first time this season, we focus on the Bundesliga as we cover the biggest match Germany has to offer at the moment, Der Klassiker. It's Borussia Dortmund hosting Bayern Munich, a match I have enjoyed a lot over the past few seasons. And with me here to discuss this match, also of Between the Posts, Jose Perez. Jose, welcome.
Hello, Eric, and hello, everyone. And I am really happy that we get to cover Bundesliga again. So you said that this match, usually you like watching the Klassiker because it's usually a very entertaining game. Did you find it entertaining this time around?
Well, yes. We got 5 goals, a lot of action, but I think the quality of play overall was a bit less than we had come to expect from this game in the past few seasons. So I enjoyed it overall. Yes, I did.
Yes, that is true. Like, there were also certain aspects in which I expected a bit more from both teams. Maybe sometimes it was just injuries, sometimes it was tactical choices. Actually, we will go through it right now. So
yeah, but do you remember the first game of Hansi Flick last season, the 4-0?
Oh yeah, that's the other thing. Dortmund has been losing these ones for a while.
And then we got the first match after lockdown with the Kimmich chip. So this yeah, I think this was a good game overall. But let's go into lineups.
Yes, so I will start talking a bit about Dortmund. So in terms of the lineup and shape, nothing's too different from the usual Dortmund that we see from Favre. So the typical 4-2-3-1 lineup. Some of the absences in Dortmund squad right now. So Sagado is out with a long-term injury. Emre Can was in the match day squad, but remember he had Corona before, so he was not 100% match fit. And Hummels came back from his injury just on time for the game. So the lineup that we had for this time was, as the goalkeeper, Burki as usual. The center backs, Mats Hummels and Manuel Akanji. The fullbacks, we had Meunier on the right as expected and Rafa Guerreiro on the left.
Sorry to interrupt immediately, but if we look at the defense, with Akanji starting, with Thomas Meunier on the right, with Guerreiro, who I loved in possession, but defensively maybe there are question marks. And Hummels, who was also a defender who maybe has an asterisk next to his name. Can you beat Bayern with a lineup that is defensively composed like that, to be honest?
You have to get a bit lucky.
Yeah.
You do have to get a bit lucky. That being said, talking about Dortmund's defense, they had only conceded, I think, 2 goals up to now in the league, something like that.
Yeah, it's not like they did bad today, but like if you look at those 4 names who make up the defense, I was a bit puzzled about how they would try to beat Bayern that way. But anyway, go on.
That is a good point, but I would also like to state that compared to previous versions of Dortmund I've seen, there might be some issues in individual quality, but like they don't make, I didn't see Dortmund make, for example, stupid mistakes in defense, which is something that did happen before. So at least they are focused. There will still be some mistakes, but to me, that defense looks more focused than before. Then, talking about defense. So I think Favre for this game decided to go for the more conservative version of his double pivot. So instead of starting the very young Jude Bellingham, we had Axel Witsel and Thomas Delaney. Again, the more conservative version of the double pivot that he can have. On the wings, so this time we had Gio Reyna starting on the left while Jadon Sancho with kind of an anonymous game on the right. And then Marco Reus in his usual role in the hole and Erling Haaland as the number 9. Who at this point, can we say that Haaland would be like one of the, say, 5 best number 9s in the world?
I think so, yes. If you looked what he did today, it was impressive for me. Alaba against Haaland was like the highlight, 1-1 in the match, was fantastic to see. And if we talk about Bayern, I always say that under Flick, they play 4-2-3-1. But we discussed it a little bit, Jose, and I think actually it's better to call it just a 4-2-4 formation. With we'll talk about a bit about why we call it that way. But Neuer in goal, as always. Center backs, Alaba and Boateng. Fullbacks, yes, we've come to expect, of course, Fonzie Davies as the left back and Pavard at right back, but both of them were not available for this match. Fonzie Davies is out until January, and Pavard was injured last minute before the game, so that was a bit unlucky. So left back, we had Lucas Hernandez, the most expensive player ever bought by Bayern Munich, and the right back Buna Sarr, who will feature a lot in this podcast, Jose, Buna Sarr at right back.
Not in a good way.
Well, double pivot in midfield. It was Kimmich with Goretzka, as always. Kimmich more as the deep playmaker and Goretzka more box to box. And then, yes, the four attackers. Thomas Müller as the number 10. He plays so up front and then he goes to the right and then he goes to the left. I don't think we can even call him a number 10, Jose. He's almost like the second striker.
Yes, and again, that goes back to why we call this formation at this point more of a 4-2-4 because and Lewandowski also like plays deep from time to time. So it's not like a clear like Müller as the number 10 and then Lewandowski as the striker. No, I think both at this point both Müller and Lewandowski operate like at a pretty similar height on the pitch.
Sure. And yeah, you mentioned already Lewandowski as the 9 and then on the left, we had Serge Gnabry, and on the right, Kingsley Coman, leaving Leroy Sané on the bench. So imagine the quality you have up front with those four guys I mentioned, and then you bring Sané off the bench for the last 20 minutes. Ridiculous squad depth they have up front.
It's quite impressive, and Sané makes for a great impact, as was shown in the game against Salzburg in midweek. And I would like to summarize like these lineups just by saying that, at least to me, yes, this game was super interesting because at least it felt to me like this was a clash between two of the best, say, five center forwards in the world. And they kind of took center stage in this game, both of them.
Yeah, both in their own ways. First half, I think we saw an approach that we did not expect in possession from Bayern Munich. Jose, what did you think?
Long balls everywhere for some reason.
They were bypassing midfield, right? Also with Kimmich, who was injured after a while in the match in the first half, but they didn't play through midfield.
And that's the thing, like the ball didn't even go through Kimmich a lot of the time. I don't know what conditioned this. I saw many situations where, for example, Boateng had the ball, and instead of, say, trying to build up on his side, because Boateng is a super competent defender with the ball, he just passes it to Alaba, and then Alaba just sends a long ball. And you're left there wondering, like, it wasn't like they were pressing you that much. So why this deliberate strategy of going for the long ball? Like, what do you think Bayern was looking for here?
Yeah, I think they were looking to exploit the space in behind because of maybe what I just mentioned, that Dortmund's defenders are, if you look at a 1v1, are not really suited to contain the Bayern attackers. And I thought they just went straight into it. Because as you were saying, the Dortmund press was not that impressive. It was just a 4-4-2 medium block formation. It was not with extra midfielders coming up high. It was not with a full back on wing back pressing situation. It was just quite common 4-4-2 mid block. And Bayern just bypassed the midfield entirely. So that was very surprising for me.
Yes, and I think a big factor in this was also just that they didn't have the usual fullbacks. So the mechanisms, like, because at this point, like, when you have, like, Pavard and Fonsi, you already have, like, a very nice, like, build-up circuit, like, between all of this, among all of these players. But here, with Hernandez and Sarr, like, two players who are not the starters, it just seemed like the chemistry just wasn't there to do those kinds of build-up. And so the central defenders just decided to go for the long ball. They thought it was the better path rather than trying to play through their fullbacks. And honestly, like, yeah, it was a very discreet game from both fullbacks in terms of, like, it's just not the same Bayern that we're used to in terms of attack. It's not as spectacular of an attack without their usual fullbacks.
Yeah, and I agree because in part I thought we would see Bayern trying to break through Dortmund's press and their medium block, but that didn't really happen. What we saw was a lot of directness from both teams because, if we're honest, Dortmund were not that patient in possession as well.
Neither team was patient in possession, yes. And with Dortmund, what I thought that it was partly one, the kind of double pivot that they were using. Like, Witsel and Delaney are not exactly known for being the most creative midfielders around. And then usually in the person that you have taking a lot of the burden in being like the key ball progressor for the team is Sancho. Mm-hmm. And today, it was not his best day. Let's just
quiet game, eh?
Yeah, like it's just, again, Sancho is supposed to be the, was supposed to be like the impact player for the side. And again, a guy who, well, one of the best dribblers in the world, a ridiculously creative winger. So he often takes those responsibilities. But today, yeah, we didn't see that too often. He didn't, a lot of the time before, like he liked to drop deeper and try to help in build-up tasks. Here, both him and all of Dortmund were just set up. And I think this is important to notice, is that this is Haaland's Dortmund. This is not Sancho's Dortmund anymore. This team seems more optimized to play around their center forward than around Sancho.
Yeah, that's a nice observation you make. I had not looked at it that way, but I do agree with it because I also always think that Sancho plays better from the left. Like he's right-footed. It's quite rare for a right winger to be right-footed at this stage at football. Like, why is he not played more often on the left, for example?
Yeah, it's one of those things. And it's interesting because he has still produced a lot of goals and assists playing from the right. He has been massively overperforming his expected goals. So you don't know
right.
if it's...
Can he be better on the left? You know, it's the same with Mbappe, who I think also is, his best position is on the left, but he always gets played as a striker or the right winger because they have Neymar, you know, so...
Yeah, so it's one of those things, like, he already produces good numbers, but yes, could Sancho produce more numbers if he's been on the left? It would be interesting to try. So talking about the left side, Dortmund's strategy, going back to what Dortmund's strategy was, it was basically send a long ball to that channel that was in between Sar and Boateng and hope that either Reina or Alan could get the ball and try to make life hard for Bayern's defenders. And to be honest, sometimes those two could latch onto the ball, but it was difficult for Dortmund, at least during the first half, to get that final ball, to get that cut back into the box for the shot. Usually, they either made a mistake on that final pass or Bayern defenders were good enough at blocking that cutback. And also, props to Neuer because he also aborted a few attacks by just being very aggressive with like his sweeper-keeper interventions.
Yeah, we've come to expect that from Neuer, but if you look at what he does over a full 90-minute match, it's unbelievable the amount of balls he swipes away between the goal and the Bayern defense. But if we look at the first 30 minutes, we didn't see big chances, like you said earlier. There was one decent chance for Goretzka from a set piece that was deflected initially, and then Boateng, of all people, brought it back into the box with a very good cross, mind you. And Goretzka didn't score it. But for the rest, there were not a lot of big chances in that first half.
Especially the first 30 minutes, yeah, they weren't. We didn't see that much. Then from Dortmund also, their approach again of doing the long balls, again, as they didn't quite end up finishing the play, so that's why they struggled to create good shots. The one good one they created was around the 21st minute, which was a counterattack. Like that ended up, I think, with Reina slipping a ball to Alan that then just like rush right past the post. And
great weight on that pass. Eh? He just slowed down a little bit and then he slipped it in, but Haaland was not clinical in that moment.
Yes, Reina is a very nice. Of course, he still doesn't have like superstar impact, but a very smart player. Eh?
Yeah, but he's young. He'll get there. Anyway, from the 30th minute until halftime, we see a bit more action. And I think it was in the 31st minute when we saw the first goal of the match from Lewandowski. It was eventually ruled out, of course, by a video assistant referee. Tell a little bit about that goal and how it came into place, because there was some funny and very good stuff going on with Kingsley Coman. So what happened there?
So I think what I like the most about that goal and what I kept in my mind is how basically Coman was receiving like this long ball. I don't remember from who. He basically orients like his first touch control perfectly so that he can just go into the place with more open space. And like if the player had, say, controlled the ball in another direction, that attack wouldn't have started. Like it would have made, maybe the defender would have gotten the ball off him. But here he oriented the first touch control right to where there's more space. And then he had a lot of room to run into. And that's when the entire attacking play started. So I don't remember. I think in the end it was Coman passing it to Gnabry, I think. I don't remember. And then they cut in, and then they cut back to Lewandowski, who put it in the net, but he was barely offside. Yes.
Yeah, and 5 minutes later, we get another key event in that first half as Kimmich gets out injured. By the way, he gets injured while doing a pretty hard foul on Haaland. Haaland gets the ball first. Kimmich decides to tackle him pretty badly and takes out Haaland. But he also takes out himself as he was injured. And then Tolisso comes in. And Jose, if we look at the style Bayern Munich played today with more long balls than normally, I didn't really understand Tolisso together with Goretzka. Like, he's not really a number six, but he's more like a central midfielder. So I was a bit lost for why Flick decided to do that.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think, because I don't know Bayern's squad that well. Did they have other options that they could have used? Actually, they still have Marc Roca, who I guess they didn't want to use him for this game. But the more natural substitute, if you want like a number six, would be him.
Yeah, or Javi Martinez as the six.
Yeah, I don't know how at this stage he will do. Weren't they trying to offload him this summer?
They were, but I think he stayed there. But anyway, back to this match. I think for this match, Tolisso was not really the right profile at the six because they had little control, but they had even less so afterwards.
Yeah. And again, this was a game where even Kimmich didn't have that much of an impact because they were just, both teams were just sending long balls everywhere. Oh. But yes, here it was even less control. And it showed a lot more in the second half. But before going into the second half, have we even talked? Then we get both goals.
It was strange because I thought, okay, we go into a halftime with a 0-0 and okay, some tactics going on, but not a lot of goal action. And then we get two goals in 2 minutes. So you tell a bit about the Dortmund goal and now we're going to the Bayern goal.
Yes, so 44th minute, Dortmund once again demonstrate that they are machine at generating good cutback opportunities just because you have players like Alan Torreina who are really good at just getting into those spaces. This was actually a situation where, by the way, both teams were really good at making bad, like stupid turnovers in the first half. So this was another turnover. Witzel recovers the ball. Sancho was operating on the left there, talking about Sancho on the left. He passes it into space for Guerreiro. Guerreiro cuts back into Royce, who slows down like just in time to avoid Boateng and Abba. Like all of them were moving at the same speed, but right before the pass, he just slows down a bit. Ah, and that's the extra bit of space Royce needed to make room for a shot. And that was a goal.
Yes, and as analytical people, we do love the cutback because that's one of the most valuable assist zones on the entire pitch, of course. So it looks like Dortmund will go into halftime leading. But then, 2 minutes into stoppage time, a good run from Lucas Hernandez, who breaks through the Dortmund defense and midfield. Gnabry gets the ball, picks up a foul, and of course, 2 minutes into stoppage time, Bayern Munich equalize because of a deflected Alaba free kick. And Jose, I have one question for you. Do you believe in that kind of really big sides like Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Liverpool, etc.? Do you believe that they have the extra bit that takes them over these kind of moments? So it's a bit of an equal first half, but Dortmund looks to go into the break with a 1-0. Do you believe in that? I think Real Madrid, we called it black magic, what they had. Like, do you believe in that or is it just randomness?
There are some of them, especially with Real Madrid, it happens to me a lot where I just think this is just black magic. With, of course, the thing is that once it starts happening so often, you're like, what is happening? Like, is this still random or is it, or they have sorcerers doing spells for them? But I mean, yes, for Real Madrid, it happens to me a lot of the time to the point in which I question, is this really random? Today, I just think like this was going to go 1-0 at halftime and then this random deflection happened. A lot of the time, like that deflection would have not worked out the way it did, but here we are.
So you don't believe in like, oh, that's a championship mentality, that's Bayern Munich experience. No, you don't buy that.
Not for this one in particular.
good.
But I mean, but this is a pretty experienced group of players. That is for sure.
It's always like, oh yeah, they have the championship mentality and blah, blah, blah. But it's just a bad free kick and it gets deflected into goal. Like, that's just luck.
That's just luck. By the way, so this first half ended up with like 8 shots from Dortmund versus like 9 shots from Bayern. Like, maybe we didn't like it as much, but it somehow ended up with a lot of shots.
Yeah, that was definitely a lot more than I thought.
Yes, and again, I think it's also a result of neither team. Like, this was a game in which neither team really had control.
Yeah, the lack of control maybe made it turn into 17 shots. Anyway, 1-1 at the half. We go into the second half. No major tactical changes. Both managers would use some substitutions, but not at halftime. And it gets a bit more fun because the scoring starts early as the 48th minute.
That was a stupidly good goal. So by the way, I would like to say that for that second goal, this one from Lewandowski, the play started with Lewandowski recovering a ball while pressing. So he starts it, he ends the damn goal. And then Bayern move it around a bit, get the ball to Lucas. Lucas sends across that. I mean, most of the time, those things just end up being cleared away. But no, if you have Lewandowski, that's not how it works. Hummels was following him, but it still didn't matter. Like, the guy just still wins the header, and it was not, that was a difficult header to get right, and it worked. Like, that was a really
good goal. That was ridiculously hard to execute, and Lewandowski does so much more than being a pure number 9. Like you mentioned earlier, he drops deep, he does a lot of defensive work with pressing, he holds the ball up well, he can play expertly with his back to goal, he can play well with his face to goal. He's an expert, of course, in the penalty box. He's so complete. Like you mentioned, Haaland is among the top 5 number 9s in the world, but I don't think there's any discussion that Lewandowski is by far the best number 9 at the moment.
Right now he is, and well deserved. Like, it's, I just find it interesting that I guess 2 years ago I thought that guys like Lewandowski or Müller were kind of finished, as in they already had finished in the sense that the best seasons in their careers were already behind them and they were not going to play better than they did before. And then Hansi Flick happened and we have this renaissance of Lewandowski and Müller that has been so enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, well, enjoyable for us as neutrals. But I think if you're Dortmund, then you hate them because they're so good. They dominate so incredibly well domestically.
Yes. So after the goal, Dortmund gets a bit more aggressive. They still go for the situations where, again, trying to get that law. The approach didn't change much, to be honest. It was still, don't try to play through the Bayern press. Send the long balls. Maybe Haaland will get something. There were even a couple situations around the 50th minute where you just see Haaland like out-muscling and out-running the poor Boateng, who's just trying. Like, marking this guy must be such a terrifying task for a defender.
Can I say a thing about Boateng? Because last season, after the lockdown and football came back, Bayern were very good. And a lot of people pointed out Kimmich and Lewandowski and Müller and Coman and Gnabry, etc., etc. But Boateng was part of that team, you know, and I do think it's nice to play alongside Alaba, but still, like, he was part of the team. And also, if you think Müller and Lewandowski were finished, well, I thought a time ago Boateng was finished. And today he didn't even do that bad marking Haaland. Like, if we're honest, he didn't do that bad, did he?
I don't think so. Like, I think, like, to me, this is not like Boateng being bad. It's just that Haaland is basically, the thing is that he, like, these kinds of runs and him slipping away from you, like, he does this to everyone.
Yeah, so I think Boateng might be very underrated at the moment because he's still like the starter in what we consider maybe the best team in the world at the moment, and he didn't do that bad today as well.
So, yeah, and another thing that we have to say is that especially with the, like, and this doesn't get said enough, like, Boateng is one of the best defenders in the world with the ball. Like, he's one of the most creative passers with the ball, and we don't say that enough.
Yeah. So anyway, it is still 2-1, and then we enter the 60th minute where Dortmund manager Lucien Favre makes his first substitution. Jude Bellingham comes in for Delaney. So Bellingham, 17 years old, very dynamic, technically very well, very mature player. And it had some pros and cons that he came on.
Yes, and it's not just Bellingham. It's just generally Dortmund's approach, because I think they were more aggressive. They started pressing a bit more. Bellingham, of course, he does not stay in position the same way that Witsel and Delaney do. So he will go out of position to combine with teammates and things, which makes it better. It means that Dortmund can be a more creative team, but it also means that in transition situations, it was a bit easier for Bayern to catch Dortmund on the counter. Yes.
Yeah. And for me, after that first hour, so like from the 60th minute until the 80th minute, I thought Dortmund all in all had the best chance to equalize, because they were really starting to make inroads into Dortmund's defense. And at this point, we do have to talk about Bruno Sar, who is the right back for Bayern at the moment, who is basically their third right back behind Pavard and Kimmich. And he didn't play a very good match defensively.
Yeah, and it always looked like he was the weak spot. That's the thing. Like that, it's one of those things where you're so obviously the weak spot that the other team targets you because they know you're the weak spot. So we had these situations where, again, they try to find the long ball in that channel, like between Boateng and Sar, and trying to see if Alan or Reyna could provoke a mistake there. For example, around the 63rd minute, you had a situation like that where they were sending the long ball. Sar makes a very bad clearance. He clears it backwards instead of clearing it forward. And then Reyna gets a good shot at goal. And again, they were looking for that. So, and again, Sar is not exactly someone who gives you that much on the attack either. So it's one of those situations where I guess it's a good player to have in your squad, you know, in case someone gets injured. But yeah, would I say he's like Bayern's starting lineup quality? It doesn't look like it.
No, but anyways, it was not all down to him. You know, we shouldn't approach it too negative. But anyway, Dortmund have some half chances, some possibilities, some inroads into the box, some crosses that are cleared out. No really big chances, but still, you know, they were getting there. And then in the 69th minute, we got a lot more substitutions. For Bayern, Coman went out, who played a good game, but okay, Sané has to play as well. And Boateng, which we discussed earlier, he had a little bit of pain. He was a little bit injured. So for him came in Javi Martinez. And on the Dortmund side, yeah, the wingers, Reyna and Sancho, went out, which I think tells you everything you need to know about Sancho. Because if he plays half decent, he plays a full 90, I think, but he got taken out now. And for Dortmund, at that point, Hazard and Julian Brandt came in. Of course, Thorgan Hazard, not Aiden. Aiden is eating hamburgers in Madrid. no joke. At that point on, I think Bayern retreated too much. I think they gave away too much space at that time, because they obviously set back to counterattack with Sané. But yeah, I didn't really like their approach at that time.
Yeah, and it was also partly like Dortmund also kind of taking control of the game themselves. Like because they now had Bellingham and Brandt on the pitch, both players are very mobile and very like, oh, I'm going to get together with teammates and make passing combinations. It was actually easier for Dortmund to keep the ball for longer compared to, you know, Tolisso and Goretzka double pivot. So yeah, at that point, Dortmund was just playing better at keeping the ball. So I was rewatching the game through like a Spanish TV network, and I think the commentators had a really nice observation that the only problem they saw with that is that, of course, like Brandt doesn't really, like he goes in for Reyna, but Brandt doesn't stay on the left wing. Brandt just moves across the entire pitch. Yeah. And in general, they were keeping more of the ball, and that's good. But also the attackers in Dortmund were more cluttered in the central spaces. And the attackers, the forwards in particular, were not like trying to like stay on the wings and, for example, to create a bit of width or to, for example, take advantage of Bruno Sar, which after Reyna left the pitch, nobody was taking advantage of that weak spot anymore.
No, and I think Reyna, I'm not going to say his age every time, but for such a young guy, he really understands the spaces well. You know, he knows when to move inside, when to stay outside. I think he did really well in that regard. But Brandt will always look for the ball inside. He will never keep that width.
Yeah, so that was the difference. Like, in some ways it was good because Dortmund could keep more of the ball. In some ways it was bad because, yes, Dortmund's attack was not as wide. And yeah, sometimes that does harm you when trying to create chances.
Let's be honest, Jose. Like, Bayern scored the third goal in the 79th minute, and I'm not under the impression that the tactical plan was set up in a way that Dortmund could create a lot of chances before that happened. Like, I didn't see them create a lot.
I mean, it was also a very kind of Favre approach to attacking, as in, yeah, just put these guys and see what they figure. Like, in attack, he's always given them a lot of freedom. So, like, it's never been a very structured attack, which, again, sometimes that's good because it gives players the freedom to, like, do passing combinations that could disorder the opposition defense, yes, but sometimes it does mean that the distribution of space is not that good and that things are just, yeah, like, sometimes it's good to have that extra bit of structure. Dortmund didn't have it today, and yes, it meant that because they didn't have that specific of a plan, I don't know, today it did feel like they could have made, like, I think you mentioned that, like, they could have made more of that period, like, between the 60th and the 80th minute where they dominated. They could have generated more from that, and they didn't.
I think so, yes. But anyway, that period is capped off, as I said, by a Bayern goal. Sané had a lot of space in transition. Sané played on the right, by the way. I don't think I've mentioned that earlier. And he gets the ball into space, cuts inside, and shoots it with his left into the far corner. So that was a good goal from him. And then I thought, okay, this is over. Done and dusted. But then we get the big Erling Haaland moment, who was making the same run all game long. And finally, he was rewarded for it in the 83rd minute.
To me, that was such a well-deserved goal because he'd been trying to do those the entire game. And yeah, it's a well-earned goal. Like, again, that's a Guerrero, lobs the ball to Haaland, and then he gets the prize. Runs in between the center backs, go past Neuer, that's a goal. Fun fact that I'd like to mention here, this is an important bit of how to orient yourself towards the ball when you're a defender. So the problem here with Alaba was that he actually turned, like, he knew where Haaland was, like, he kept track of him. But the problem is that Alaba the entire time was just facing the ball. So when Guerrero makes the pass, he has to turn like 180 degrees. And in that second where you make that turn, Haaland already ran past you like for 2 to 3 meters. Like, he already made like a 2 to 3 meter gap with you. And at that point, Alaba couldn't catch him. So in terms of like how to orient, how do you position your body, you have to be at that point. He shouldn't have been looking just at the ball. He at that point should have been turned, say, like 90 degrees, already prepared to be running backwards. Because in that moment where he had to turn completely 180 degrees, that's mm-hmm. when Haaland took advantage to run it towards goal.
Yeah, I do agree with you on this very technical detail. However, I do think all in all, Alaba and Boateng did a good job today.
I don't think they had a bad game. They were just facing one, as we said before, one of the five best center forwards in the world. And against a player like this, it's yeah. not, you cannot have an okay match. You need to have a good to great match if you want to prevent him from scoring.
No, I told you on Slack, because I rewatched the match as well. Like, I told you, he's going to score so many goals, Haaland, in his career. Like, of course, anything can happen. Of course, lifestyle, we don't know how he copes with being the best striker in the world if Lewandowski quits at one time. But if anything goes well, like, this guy is going to be the prolific striker of his generation.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like, I don't even blame the defenders for, say, missing a detail like this. It's just when you face this guy, you have to be, your defending has to be perfect. He forces you to be perfect, yeah, or else he will score. That's the kind of threat we are talking about. And again, we have to keep emphasizing that at this point, this guy, how old is he? He's already one of the five best number nines in the world.
And the biggest chance for Dortmund to take a point came 3 minutes later, because once again, Haaland muscled himself into a duel with the Bayern defense, took the ball and the play started, and it ended with a Marco Reus volley in the 86th minute. And Jose, if that one would have gone in, it would have been like one of the most spectacular goals of the season, because it was an equalizer against Bayern. It would have been, and he struck that so well and so hard, but it went over.
Yeah, and in the end, we get this result. It'll be interesting to see what the XG model says, because I think both teams ended up creating pretty good shots. What I say this is that if I look at the XG model, there's a good chance that it'll look a lot like a draw.
Yeah, well, our expected goals are not yet in. So I think something like that. Also, Lewandowski had two goals disallowed in this match. So I think that always messes a little bit with the XG. But anyways, I think in terms of pure chances that we saw, I think it was a bit even. I think Bayern had a bit more really big chances to score, but all in all, it was even. And if Reus scores that goal, it's 3-3. And I don't think both managers can complain that they both got a point, right?
Yes. So I think in this case, both managers would have been pretty content to go home with 1 point each, because it was a game where both teams generated a lot of chances. It felt pretty even, like the shot totals are also similar, so like 14 to 15. So It was all in all a pretty even game, even though Bayern almost managed to generate one more goal, isn't it?
Yeah, I just mentioned it briefly that Lewandowski had two goals disallowed because of VAR, one in the first half, what we mentioned, and also one in the like the 30th, like the 93rd or the 94th minute was disallowed, and then Dortmund had their little big offensive surge, but they didn't score anymore. So we have 3-2, Jose. And I think there's one question we have to ask ourselves.
Yeah, so I guess what I wonder here is why Bayern, one of the scariest teams in Europe, a team that honestly outpressed and outpossessed all of Europe this year, why were they struggling to control the game today?
I think we should mention a couple of things. Like, one, this was not their strongest 11. Let's just say that it wasn't, because they miss some key players at the moment. And if we look at their results, like, they lost that one freak match against Hoffenheim. You remember that 4-1?
Mm-hmm.
But since then, they have like won 9 or 10 matches in a row. They've won a Champions League match at midweek with 6-2. I didn't see that match, but I heard that Red Bull Salzburg did put up some pretty good pressing sequences, that it was more even than the 6-2 suggested. However, I do agree with you that today it was not their most dominant display, but if we look at the results this season, at the underlying numbers, at stuff like that, that they're probably on track. Like we should not take for granted what they did last season, because that was insane. What they showed last season was the best football in Europe, and they were the best team, and they won the Champions League. And I think there is a slight drop-off, which we saw today as well, but I don't think we're being very critical of them if we call it not perfect. You know what I mean?
Oh, I completely agree. And right now, I still think Bayern are the best team in Europe, especially with even Liverpool, who are still a pretty good team. Like, even their defensive numbers have taken even more of a hit. Like, their underlying defensive numbers have taken more of a hit. So right now, in terms of form, I still see Bayern as the best team in Europe. And in certain situations, I mean, today, yes, their struggles to control the game, to me, it was mostly down to lineup and to the absences in the team. So nothing, like, it's not something systemic. And honestly, even if, say, their pressing intensity right now is not what it was at the end of last season, these guys, it's still, this, at least to me, the scariest attack in Europe. And it's so easy for them to generate a goal against you.
Yeah, true. Before we go out, is there anything you'd like to say about Dortmund? Like, I don't really have a lot to say. Like, everybody, I love their young talent and team, but I don't think it's an approach that will get you past Bayern, even not incidentally, like once every 5 or 6 seasons. So if you look at where that club is going strategically, I love the young talents, but I don't think it's a very smart thing to do, because I don't think you'll beat Bayern with it.
I mean, it just depends on what your intentions are with the club. Like, is their priority to compete against Bayern? Maybe not. Maybe their priority is just to keep the profits coming in from very smart player purchases and sales. So, I mean, it is a very good squad. It has a lot of talent. I mean, we're talking about a team that goes and subs in Jude Bellingham, Thorgan Hazard, and Julian Brandt. So it's, I mean, those are pretty good subs. Those are even subs that other like big teams in Europe, like Barcelona or Real Madrid, would be like that. That's still a very nice sub to have. So they've done some pretty nice job with their player purchases, but yeah, it's still not. I think both you and I agree that even with Dortmund's quality, it's still not quite enough to fight against Bayern for 34 games of a league.
No, and that's a sad conclusion, but I think the only right conclusion.
Yeah, and I mean, today, sure, there were maybe some lineup choices. Maybe the double pivot choice for Dortmund could have been different. Maybe Sancho shouldn't have played that much because he was having a bad day. But I do think that what we saw today is not too far away from the ceiling of what Dortmund can do. Like, it's not, I do think that this is as far as their talent can take them, and it will, and I don't think their talent will be enough to compete against Bayern for 34 league games. So that is the current situation. It's hard to, especially if Bayern continues playing at this level, I don't see anyone who will be able to reach them in the Bundesliga. Once again.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jose. Let's leave it to that. Thanks for listening. I did enjoy it again. It was better than last week.
Absolutely. But I mean, last week was kind of a low bar in terms of in terms of game quality. But I mean, yes, today we had, this was a fun game. There was a lot of back and forth. We had a lot of chances, a lot of shots. And honestly, even though today was not like a super complex tactical game, we still had a lot of things happening, a lot of things to talk about, and I have to keep highlighting again, this was a game between two of the best center forwards in the world, and both of them delivered. It was pretty nice.
Yeah, that's the good way to put it. Anyway, there is already a written report on our website, written by Manasvin Andra. Go to betweentheposts.net if you want to read that. It's free for all, so you don't need a subscription to read that, so go check that out. Yeah, we'll be back next week. Thanks so much. Keep subscribing, keep writing reviews, and I will see you next week, Jose. Is it international break? No.
I think it's international break next week, is it?
Yeah. I don't think we ever did international break, did we?
No, not yet. We'll think about it. If not, we still get kind of a nicely, a well-deserved break.
But. Yeah. Thanks for listening. And Jose, I will see you next time. Maybe next week, maybe in 2 weeks. Who knows? Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, Eric. And thanks, everyone, for listening. See you around.